Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Great design isn't just limited to computers and cars. How about jet engines and hospitals? Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. This is Bill Quinn, and today is April 23rd, 2013. We're on day two of our design article that you can find on pages 34, 35, and 36 in your Advanced magazine. Good design is good business, and it's really an in-depth look at how important design is in with new products and companies. And we actually looked back yesterday a little bit, maybe to one of the originators of this concept of design being important, Thomas Watson Jr. With IBM. So we think of design today with all the cool products that we see, the gadgets and things from Apple's and Samsung's and those companies. But this is an idea that came from not just Watson, but other people many, many decades ago. But they were actually forward-thinking people. And so that's why they were in the position they were in. Well, back here, joining me for day two of this article are my two panelists, Naomi Beeshable and Josh Mooney. Hi, panelists.
Hi, Bill.
Now, before we get into today, let me just get a thought from yesterday from both of you.
I like the word oracle. We talked about Thomas Watson Jr. being this pioneer of business as he led IBM for many years. And if you're an oracle, it's almost like you can see the future and you know a lot about a subject and can give advice about something. And I mentioned in the previous program that Warren Buffett, we call him the Oracle from Omaha because he knows so much about investing.
Yes, and that's where he lives, Omaha, Nebraska, which is really kind of hard to believe that this guy who's so wealthy lives out in Omaha, Nebraska. You would expect L.A. or New York, right?
That's right.
Yeah, not Omaha, Nebraska. But
that's
it's
another
a nice
story.
Place. It's another story we're not going to get into. Speaking of major metropolitan areas, our next panelist hails from Winnipeg.
Kind of.
Which is like a suburb of Omaha, right?
That's not really where I hail from. That's where I lived before I moved here, but
all right, enough about Winnipeg and Omaha. Tell me about yesterday.
Well, one of the things that fascinated me from our discussion yesterday was when we talked to Whirlpool's Vice President of Design, which we were surprised to find out is a job title at this company that creates machines for your home, like dishwashers or washing machines. And so their VP, Pat Chivoni, was talking about how they were changing from being a manufacturing-based company to being a product company. And I think that idea is a really interesting one. Basically, it's going from just offering the only option available to offering a selection of different items to choose from. I think of something like a computer keyboard. When we first were introduced to a computer keyboard, there was really only one option. But now you get choices of colors and shapes and even where the keys are. You know, this one is ergonomic. It fits your hand so well. Or this one you can roll up and put away when you're not using it. Or this one projects onto your tabletop. You know, there's so many options that now it's a product.
Yeah. You made me think of a computer mouse.
Mm-hmm.
There's a plethora of mouses
yes.
available.
Yeah. Oh. Mice?
Mouses?
You call
them mice?
It is dizzying. You walk into stores these days and they seem to all do the same thing, but they offer just unique, slight differences, subtle color changes like you said, or the way that things are shaped. Do you ever find it you're almost paralyzed by the inability to make decisions sometimes with so many choices?
I had to buy a camera. I was in America about 6 months ago, and I was trying to buy a camera. And I actually locked up. Hmm. That's what happened. I mentally locked up. You know how your computer just like can't move?
Freezes.
I was taking in so much information about so many cameras, I couldn't even – mentally, I couldn't move. Physically, I couldn't move. I was like, oh, too much.
Right.
Right. And I've had that experience when I've been working in sales, actually, when I've worked for different retail companies where, for example, I worked at a kitchen store and someone would walk in and say, I'd like a pot. And I'd be like, okay, what kind of pot? And they're like, what do you mean, what kind of pot? I'm like, well, we have this option or this option or this option. They're like, I don't care. You know, they just want something to cook their spaghetti in. And here I am with 18 options for them. And most people just, I mean, it's nice, I guess, to have choice, but it can also be a little overwhelming. I agree.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's why we have informative salespeople like you to help us.
That's true.
So, all right, listeners, let's move into our reading today and turn to page 35. And yesterday we finished hearing from Pat Schiavone, who is VP of Design at Whirlpool. And now we're going to move into some different types of products with our first reading today. So look at that left column, and we'll read the first half today down to line 21.
Designers, building a better solution. You might wonder what design can possibly have to do with the success of a jet engine or an MRI machine. But hospitals and power plants are now linking their machines into ecosystems, and well-designed iPad apps are the simplest way to manage them. If we don't do it, someone else will, says Greg Petroff, General Manager of User Experience and Design at GE. GE could be relegated to not having the top relationship with the customer. Our hypothesis is that we can build a better solution. Designers are the ones best situated to figure out how a kit of parts can become something more. They're the ones who can figure out the human interface for a vast chain. If they do their job right, the result, a working ecosystem, is a far better platform for innovation than an isolated product. Just think about Apple and how its products have expanded from iMacs to iPods, iTunes, iPhones, and iPads, all linked via its iCloud.
Designers, building a better solution.
Yes, and this is probably a little different than what you think about a graphic designer or an artist just making something look pretty. This is about this notion of designers impacting how something works. And that is certainly something that IBM became famous for in the computer age. And now we're going to talk about a whole different type of company, GE, using it in things that they do.
Okay, so of course we've got engineers that are going to help with the design of products because they have to build this thing to make it functional, that it does what it is supposed to do, whether it's an elevator or if it's a flashlight. You're going to have engineers involved, but then also now the designers have such a key part.
Right, but a lot of us are wondering, just as it says in this first sentence, what does design really have to do with all this? What's the connection between design and the success of certain kinds of products, especially something that seems as far removed from, you know, your day-to-day sales as a jet engine or an MRI machine?
Mm-hmm. Okay. But hospitals and power plants are now linking their machines into ecosystems.
Well, usually when we think of an ecosystem, we think of the great outdoors. We think of nature and how one sort of environment works, how the water supply and the trees that grow and the animals and so on, and how it all works together in this beautiful system.
Mm-hmm.
But this is using that term and applying it to how something functions maybe within a company or an organization.
Yeah. Okay. And we're looking at the entire organization. So now we continue here about well-designed iPad apps.
That's right. So big machines like jet engines and MRIs are now being controlled by iPads. It says that well-designed iPad apps are the simplest way to manage these large products. So maybe the MRI machine spits out an image, and that gets sent to the doctors who need to evaluate it, and all that can happen via iPad apps.
Okay. There's many reasons, as Josh was mentioning, for this to be in place. I was thinking that, yes, of course, you've got communications, easy for people to access the information. The other thing I can think of is this enables more people to operate the equipment then, or to do more roles, to have more functions then. You don't have so many people that just do one thing. You have many people that do many things, and they're enabled buy iPads that have these apps on them. So a hospital is one great example of why you need people like that. So now, why? What's another reason? Why do we do this?
Well, according to the general manager of user experience and design at GE, whose name is Greg Petroff, he basically just says, well, if we don't, someone else will. Someone will make this system, so we want to be on top of it. Mm-hmm. And it comes back to something that I think a lot of companies and organizations are trying, which is to really look at the bigger picture of what is all going on in their operations and how to keep all of that moving as smoothly as possible.
I wonder if they have to think about that even if it's not currently in demand, mm-hmm. right? When they build their next jet engine, do they need to say, okay, maybe will one day somebody want to maintain this jet engine via iPad?
Right.
Or is it something that people are asking for now?
Mm-hmm. I would imagine in their role and in his role of general manager of user experience and design at GE, they probably do have to ask that question. In their meetings, okay, is this going to be operated differently 5 or 10 years from now? And what do we build into it in preparation?
We have an article coming up next month that actually does focus on hospitals and part of the bigger picture there and how design affects that. And in that case, it has to do with even just a hospital room, how it is designed, how it's set up. It can make a really big difference in how quickly someone gets better. And so that's an example of how there really is a bigger picture at play here. But some of the things you need to think about might not be the things that are actually happening in action yet. It might just be sort of the direction that you're all headed in.
Okay. We started this half of this paragraph with the first part of this quote, if we don't do it, someone else will, from Greg Petroff. And then he continues in line 9 as to, you know, what could happen?
Well, it says that GE could be relegated to not having the top relationship with the customer. So if they don't offer these cutting-edge design-centric solutions, they could be moved out or relegated to a lower position in their relationship with their customers.
When I hear relegated, I often think of basketball teams mm-hmm. where someone is relegated to the bench. You know, they're saying, oh, I'm sorry, we can't use you right now. So go into that lower position and just wait. Yeah. So it's the same idea. With companies, this can happen very quickly, very easily, and they always have to be on their guard to say, okay, how do I make sure that no one is relegating us to a lower priority on their list?
Certainly, if you're in the top position, say if you're GE in the top position in the vendor-customer relationship, you actually help design some of the solutions that they're looking for, which gives you a tremendous advantage. But if you aren't in that top position, you really – at a disadvantage.
That's right. They may say, GE, now we're using company X's ecosystem and your product needs to fit into that system, yeah. which of course would cut their profit margin.
Yeah. He continues by saying, our hypothesis.
Right. And a hypothesis is just an idea that you kind of throw out there as what you think might explain what's going on or it's kind of based on facts, but it's not definite yet. So he says, our kind of theory about this is that we can build a better solution. There is potential for that.
Okay. Next paragraph.
It says that designers are the ones best situated to figure out how a kit of parts can become something more. They're the ones who can figure out this human interface. So maybe Bill talked about engineers might be leading the product ideation, but it's the designers who think about how something is used. And it's this idea of almost being empathetic to how a user is going to engage mm-hmm. with your product and thinking about what they need and how they can work with it and putting that role in the hand of a designer.
Yeah, the word interface has come up quite a bit this month, actually. The idea of this is how people interact with a system. So, for example, we talk about website interfaces. When you log on somewhere, is it easy to use? Is it intuitive? Can you easily tell what to click on next, how to enter your information, and so on? So this is saying the designers are responsible for that. They're responsible for how people can access the products that are there.
Mm-hmm. That's why I like Greg Petroff's title, General Manager of User Experience mm-hmm. and Human Interface.
Right.
I worked for Xerox early in my career, but we had copiers that worked, but people hated them. Mm-hmm. But they were cumbersome, and they just and of course the next
and
time
ugly.
Around they were ugly. They were ugly, and the next time around they bought something else. So now, right. However, we see about okay if we do things right.
That's right. The result, this working ecosystem, creates a better platform for innovation than just an isolated product. And when you're creating a platform for innovation, it means that there's a base, that there's a foundation for mm-hmm. us to create better ideas on top of.
Okay. Not just one, not an isolated product, but a whole bunch of them.
Right. And so sometimes you see a company that they have one product and then they introduce another product that seems totally different from the first one. Mm. And you kind of go, wait a second, what is this now? But they use, again, the example of Apple here. It just sort of expanded iMacs to iPods, iPods to iTunes, iTunes to iPhones. It's a very natural progression. And every time you see a new product, you go, yep, that's Apple. Yep, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so it's that ecosystem. It's this sort of family of products where the innovation happens very easily, as opposed to, you know, some company saying, oh, maybe we should try something else.
You think about a company that doesn't have a built-in ecosystem like Microsoft,
right.
who's tried the Zune music player and the Kin mobile phone, and they haven't worked because they don't have iTunes. We're all, carrying around our connection to our iTunes library of movies and music and pictures in our pockets. And for another company to kind of tap into that ecosystem and ask us to move everything over to somewhere else is a lot to ask.
Right. It's a similar idea also, and of course, this is the woman's perspective. A lot of clothing companies, they have to have a trademark style so that people will want to buy all of their clothes from that shop. They want to show how, you bought those jeans? They'll look great with this jacket. And you have that jacket? They'll work really well with these shoes. And so all of those products have to work together so that when you walk in, you're not looking at two things that look completely opposite that you would never wear on the same day.
Mm. Do you have that problem, Bill?
I just grab whatever's close.
Right.
So much easier for men.
I'm a guy.
We have to think about these things.
All right. Let's get on with our second reading for today.
Commoditization pushes designers to the fore. Innovation usually cycles between periods of raw technical inventiveness and the finer task of packaging it for mass adoption. Consider Bump, an app that lets users swap data between phones simply by bumping them together. Its co-founder, Dave Lieb, notes that in the first dot-com rush, online enterprises had to build their infrastructures from scratch, so engineers were paramount. In our app economy, everything has changed. Bump had 1 million users before it spent $4,000. It didn't need infrastructure, thanks to Amazon's server hosting service. It didn't need advertising because of social media. And the App Store solved any distribution problem. Development was a breeze, too, because of Apple's Software Developers Kit. These are all things that used to cost millions, Lieb says.
Okay, yesterday in our second reading, we had the specialized term commoditization, and that's actually at the title of this section.
It says that commoditization pushes designers to the fore, and the idiom to the fore means it's brought to our attention. It's brought maybe to the center of a conversation, and that's because products, as we said, are so there's so many different types and varieties, and they all look alike. So the unique selling ability of some products is based on its design.
Okay. And as we begin here, we see some of the process.
Right. Innovation usually cycles between periods of raw technical inventiveness and the finer task of packaging it for mass adoption. Okay. So innovation is that creativity of creating new things. These cycles that they're talking about You can kind of imagine it like a big track, you know, a big circle kind of going from one end to the other and back again. So on the one hand, we have these times where they are just creating things. They're being inventive and innovative, and they've got some sort of product that they just thought of. But then as it comes around and it gets ready to be sold, you actually have to think, okay, will people want to buy this? Will they get it? Will they understand our idea? Will it fit into what they already own and enjoy?
Mm-hmm. All right. And we have an example here in this next paragraph.
It's a mobile app called Bump, and an app or application, in this case, that let users swap data between phones simply by bumping them together. And when you swap something, it's when you exchange it, right? So we're giving you my, say, phone number and email address, and you give me yours simply by touching our cell phones.
Yeah, we had actually talked about Bump last year in an article about the disappearing business cards, and Bump was one of the apps people are using now. They can just touch their phones together and exchange business cards. Great idea. Now, we hear from, or at least we learn about their co-founder, Dave Lieb.
Yes, and he notes, or he mentions, he kind of just brings our attention to the fact that in the first dot-com rush, so in other words, when people were getting into the whole online business thing, these enterprises had to build their infrastructures from scratch. So an infrastructure is how your company works, how it's set up. And to build something from scratch is from the very beginning. When we talk about recipes, we can talk about making a cake from a box or making a cake from scratch. From scratch means you took all the separate ingredients and put them together yourself.
So you think about a company that went big in the dot-com rush like Amazon. Amazon needed to build its website, right? Mm-hmm. And they did that from scratch. They brought hundreds and hundreds of web designers and developers together, and they built it internally, their own infrastructure. And then they had to build the fulfillment centers and the distributors and get all those great products to our door. That is not the case in the app economy. You don't have to build nearly anything on your own since so much of it is available through partners and distributors.
Mm-hmm.
Before, it says that engineers were paramount. If someone is paramount or something is paramount, it's the most important thing. And so here in the past, engineers were so important because everything was new. Everything was fresh. The whole industry was being created.
Yeah. It was like getting a 747 off the ground. You had to have all of this stuff in place, loaded up with fuel, just to get this thing up in the air. But that has all changed. Bump is a really interesting example because I like this next sentence, how many users they had and what the cost they had.
That's right. They went to 1 million users. That means that's how many people had downloaded their app and were using it on their phones before they'd even spent $4,000.
Right. They had all these users and they had hardly spent anything. I mean, I don't know what Yahoo might have spent to get 1 million users, but it was a lot more than $4,000.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
They don't need that anymore. It didn't need infrastructure.
Right, because it is working off of what Amazon had created that first time around. Mm-hmm. Amazon's server hosting service is what kind of gave them their basics to get started from. And so they didn't have to start from scratch.
Advertising?
That was handled through social media,
okay.
Right? So the ability to just ask your friends to refer this app to others. Because if you don't have anyone to bump, it's not going to be a very successful app, right?
Well, that's true.
And any of us can do this too, as far as the advertising using social media as a platform. That has all changed.
And people do. I mean, we see this more and more where someone posts something and they say, please spread the word. And it's, you know, your friend's new business.
Mm-hmm. The App Store solved distribution problems. There really was no distribution. People could just go to the App Store. You didn't have to open up a retail location.
Right.
Yeah, just go right there. And development was
a breeze, which means it was very, very easy for them to build it. All they needed was Apple's SDK, or Software Developer Kit, which is downloadable off the Apple website for free, and it allows you to build an app that will work within the Apple's operating system.
Okay. And co-founder Dave Lieb says,
well, these are all things that used to cost millions of dollars. So it used to be that to gain this kind of success, you would need to spend a lot of money. The flip side, of course, is they're making less money too.
Okay. Let's look at the top right corner on page 35. We've got a sidebar, and we talk about some of the challenges face three companies we're all familiar with. And Josh, let me have you read number one.
Apple. Design made Apple a behemoth, but its products are showing signs of strain. OS X is getting bloated. iOS feels like a jail cell. iTunes needs to be cleaned up. Worse, rivals are raiding Apple's talent. Can the company find new product paths for innovation? And will its product design chops translate to managing a sprawling ecosystem?
Wow.
Explain.
Yeah, this sounds like a bad, scary movie. You know? Like, first of all, a behemoth is a giant. Mm. So Apple is, of course, a giant. But its products are getting a little bit tired. So OS X, it says, is bloated. It's too big. It's too much for your computer to handle. Mm-hmm. iOS feels like a jail cell. Would you agree with that?
Well, that it's hard to swap other content, to bring in other file formats into your Apple operating system. You do feel almost like you're on an island.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then iTunes, of course, is a little old, a little clunky. They think it can improve. But the other issue is that there are rivals. So in other words, competitors are also kind of coming into that territory.
Yeah.
So will the company be able to really revive itself?
Yeah.
A lot of people are asking that right now. There's a lot of pressure on Apple.
Interesting.
The biggest company in the world by market cap. Can they continue to innovate?
Yeah. Let me have Naomi read number two.
Google, as the search giant battles Facebook and Apple, it's hiring designers at a rapid clip. Results have been mixed. Google's Nexus 7 tablet is a winner, but the Q Media streaming device was DOA. Can it shift its data-driven mindset to a design-oriented one? Will design at Google always feel like a kid playing dress-up?
You don't think of Google and design going together, right? Because mostly they bring us search listings, which don't have very much design put in them. But as they look to build products and to build on their Android phone platform, they are definitely building their design chops.
DOA, dead on arrival. And I had almost even heard kind of that about Google Plus, and not
right.
necessarily that it was poorly designed, but the thing is, it was such an uphill battle for them. And maybe they were getting into something that really was not their niche, not their realm. You had mentioned Microsoft failing in some areas, and I think some companies try and do things outside of their area, and it's really difficult simply because consumers have a certain perception of them. And that's
right.
really a hard thing to overcome.
Yeah, well, and so that idea of will Google feel like a kid playing dress up when it tries to design things well, I think it's a funny way to imagine it, but it actually makes sense. People think of Google in a certain way, and so can they ever think of it in a different light?
Yeah, and we talked about that LinkedIn and Facebook comparison in our earlier article this month. Josh had mentioned about how Facebook might be considered play, whereas LinkedIn is considered more for business. Well, interesting topic, great discussion here, and we're actually going to continue with our sidebar tomorrow. So come on back, listeners. We'll see you then. Goodbye.